Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we'll talk to Booger McFarland about all the big moves in NFL free agency. And we'll kind of sort of go around the NBA with Tim Legler, but more importantly, we'll get his thoughts on Caitlin Clark. But first, how about a little commerce?
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Yes, uniform daylight savings time, yeah. But does it establish when you impose it on people?
No, I'll have to keep looking for that.
So you look that up.
And three counties in the West Texas region follow mountain time. Because of daylight savings times, areas observing central time switch between central standard and central daylight.
Yeah, so that's like places like El Paso, all the way in West Texas.
El Paso.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso.
All parts of Culberson County, according to the Google that you had me search.
Who sings that?
Marty Robbins.
Marty Robbins, yes.
I can't help it.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I have really good news today for anybody who ever went to Binghamton University. The loathsome Seawolves of Stony Brook, who walked out on the America East to go to the Colonial Athletic Association, got beat yesterday in the finals of the CAA tournament.
In overtime.
Got beat in overtime, tantalized, teased, and then they lost. And they're out. They're not going to the NCAAs. And the College of Charleston, I think, beat them?
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Probably a better school, too. I'm so sick of hearing about Stony Brook.
Is this your one shining moment?
Yeah, they have no shining moment.
This is your
although
one.
It's my one because it's not Binghamton's. But Stony Brook did make, if I'm not mistaken, I think they made the sort of College World Series at one point. They were in the 16 teams maybe that got to the college. Yeah, Stony Brook's better than I want them to be. They are. They're yes. better than I want them to be. And yes. more ambitious than Binghamton. And I wish Binghamton had that ambition. Anyway, that's a small little win for me as far as I'm concerned.
Can I answer a couple of questions from the other day?
Oh, yes.
So we had an email that emailed in and said that Revere was not named after Paul Revere.
Which surprised me.
And it turns out it actually was.
Okay.
Yeah, it was. Revere. There's a long sort of, you know, meandering history of the town. When it finally became a town, they said, we want to name it after Paul Revere. So
okay.
That appears to be the thing with that.
What about the daylight savings time question?
Yes. So we wanted to know, why is it in March? Like, who decides when it actually is?
They didn't ask me. I mean, and nobody said, Tony, what do you think?
Right, which they should have. They should have gone to every person living in this country. So there's something called the Uniform Time Act of 1966, and they said, okay, it's originally going to be in the last Sunday in April. Then there was an amendment to that to move it up in 1987 to the first Sunday in April. And then in 2006, the Energy Policy Act of 2006, this would be the Bush administration, moved it up to the second Sunday in March.
Could we call George on the phone?
Say,
or call his brother?
Yeah.
I know his brother, Marvin. And so what... Do you like this idea? Because I don't like this idea.
Yeah.
April 1st is fine with me.
Yeah.
First weekend in April is fine with me. I mean, that ushers in spring. You come in, the Masters is right after that. But March 10th is absurd.
Second Sunday in March feels a bit early for this.
No, it's absurd.
Yeah.
And I guess it could be the 8th. It could be as early as the 8th.
Yeah.
Could be as late as the 14th or 13th or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it stinks.
It does.
I mean, what was the reason for that? Was there an energy crisis?
Not saying the first week does not stink, but if you're to wait to that point of April, you're already getting enough daylight at the end of the day. You might as well just skip it altogether, which I think some people are saying is healthier for all of our bodies.
And it's healthy for the animals, and it's healthy for the farmers.
Yeah, we just need to get this done. Do away with it.
I don't like this at
all. Are you still saying on my body clock or feels like right now, or are you back to just saying time is what it is?
It's Wednesday, and now for me, time is what it is. How about for you?
I'm still saying feels like.
Okay, no, I'm by Wednesday, I'm good. My entire thing is based on the dog. My entire deal is feeding and walking the dog, and the dog's body clock to be jolted by an hour
is a lot.
You know, that's a lot. So I think we're almost back with the dog, or the dog is laughing, saying, "I don't care about this. Just feed me. If you feed me earlier, because it's on my earlier body clock, I'm happy to do it." Which leads me to something I wanted to talk about. I am one of those people who readily admits that I am influenced by advertising. If I see a good commercial, if I think the writing is good, if I think the filming is good, if it's simply on an airwave where you don't see it and I think the writing is good, I can be influenced by that. There's no question about it. You know, I would buy something because the advertising around it is effective and I think it's good. I don't know if everybody does this, but I assume everybody does because there wouldn't be advertising if it didn't work.
For instance,
you have your hand up.
The carousel wheel.
Yes, well, sure. That's the greatest. That's the greatest 2 minutes in the history of television, Don Draper. So, I think that is the basis of everything I say about Subaru. And I admire those commercials. I think that if they can subliminally get you to think that if you buy a Subaru, you love your children more than the person next door. That's great. And it drives you not only out of guilt, but out of aspiration. It's great. And I admire it. In recent months, I have seen a lot of commercials for dog foods that appear to be like food that you would eat. They come in little pouches. When they're opened up, they appear to have vegetables and meats or chickens. And the entire structure of the advertising is, if you don't give your dog this, like, you're hurting your dog.
Yeah.
Not only are you a slob.
You're an evil person.
But you're hurting your dog. You're
right.
Killing.
The food looks recognizable. It's not based on the convenience cans that you might have seen 10 or 20 years ago. And all this stuff is cyclical. Right now, you know, even from the time when Bootsy was born, you saw this with baby food, with pouches. You know, even now as they get older, with the types of fruit snacks any sort of a treat that you'd give your kids. Yeah.
Well, I don't have three boys under seven. I got a dog. So, you know, I'm not paying attention to the pouch ads, but I'm paying attention to the dog. Now, there's a thing called Chewy. That's a delivery service.
Oh, yeah.
Chewy.
Boxes everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know that they only offer real food for dogs. I think you could probably order anything and get it sent to you by Chewy. So I want to make a distinction here. When Michael says, you know, the cans in the last 10 or 20 years, you go back 60 years. Like canned dog food, it always smells bad.
Yeah,
Alpo. You always have to take a spoon and stick it into the dog's dish. Even I knew as a kid, that couldn't be great. So dry dog food was the way I've gone for many, many years with many dogs. Well, I think it is. I think that's the generic name, kibble. And we get one, and I've fed Chessie this her whole life. She's never refused to eat.
Right.
She's never looked at me and go, the chicken again?
Again.
No. Again, dad. No, she hasn't done that.
And
she's happy.
The kibble.
When I go to the dish, when I pick her dish up and I take the food out that I store in a box and then I portion it out and give it to her, she's happy.
She's thrilled.
She's
happy.
The same
box since Maggie.
Yes,
the container.
Same box.
And Chessie's bowl is one of those mazes because she devours her food so quickly. We need to try and slow her down, a little bit of a prevent.
If we put dog food in a canned dog food in the dish, It would be gone before I got it into the dish.
Oh, absolutely.
This is why it is the, and the phrase that is used is to wolf it down, not to dog it down, but to wolf it down. And she would do that. And most dogs would do that. Like today, when I was walking her this morning, there was a dead bird. She was going to eat the bird.
Yeah.
I had to drag away from the bird. She was going to, first she was going to roll in the dead bird to get the scent of the dead bird on her. Yep. And then she was going to eat the bird.
She was going to eat the bird.
So I had to drag her away. I mean, drag her away. She's a big dog.
And that's why when these things are, oh, this is the best food for your dog, you know. Well, it's like the dog will eat a dead bird in the street.
I understand. That doesn't mean it's good. Well, that doesn't mean by the fifth dead bird, the dog wouldn't die. But so I am guilted. And these commercials are pretty good.
They're effective.
There's two different brands that are out there that stand out. I'm not necessarily going to name them. I think we have some vets who listen to us, some veterinarians. And I'm curious about this. Because these individual pouches, it looks like they got some carrots. It looks like they got some meat, maybe some peas or stuff. It
you got to keep these in the fridge.
Oh, do you? It looks like
human food.
Oh, yeah,
like I don't know, but some
food.
Of these are nice enough you got to keep in the fridge.
Not, my question is, one, is it actually better for your dog? Two, is what I'm feeding my dog bad for my dog? Three, how long do these things last? When do you have to get to them? And four, how much more expensive must they be than what I buy? I buy a 35-pound bag of dog food for about $100.
It's a big bag.
Lasts about a month, something like that.
You can lift that bag?
Not anymore. That's why I need you to come over.
I need you look like a tough guy over here with your 35-pound of dog food. Come on.
By the way, I need you to change the propane in the grill.
That I can do. Speaking of propane, I'd always look at Chan's fridge when I'd go visit. And I'd say like, oh, okay, we see some chicken, we see some burger patties, and I'd smell him cooking these in the middle of the day, and I realized he was making his dog gourmet meals every day.
Yeah. Well, the dog was an older dog. Charlie was
an older dog. Yeah, and I think so, to your question about is this good for the dogs, a lot of it depends on the dog's age, the dog's sort of general health, but what the dog is used to, because you want to try and have that regularity.
See how smart he is? He's got that advanced degree from another fancy school.
Yeah. You don't go on the internet or you're not on social media, but you would love targeted ads. If you appreciate TV commercials, targeted ads tell you things that you don't even know that you want, and now you need them.
For example, a guy I know has a Rivian.
Okay? Oh, the truck, yes.
Yeah, he's got a Rivian. Well, this is a station wagon Rivian. It's not the truck Rivian.
All right.
And I said, I've never seen any advertising for this. It's all on social media. It's all on. Not on over the air. They don't need slobs making 20 grand a year thinking about buying a Rivian for 85.
No, when you first saw the Rivian, someone had to be on a year-long wait list for it. So that you're creating that scarcity, too.
Yeah. He told me that he put a deposit on a Rivian and waited 2 years. Waited 2 years, and by then the price had gone up about 15 grand, but he was in on the lower.
Oh, on the lower.
He was in on the lower. Okay. I learned a lot about Rivians, because they're really weird looking.
Yeah, they're
gigantic.
Distinctive look, yes.
The headlights. Yeah. So let me get back to the dog food. Am I hurting Chessie by not getting her this food? It feels like I'm being guilted, and the commercials are wisely done. The person in the commercial that expresses some skepticism about this is literally thrown out of the trailer or thrown out of the apartment, and then the owner says, well, we didn't need her anyway. So
and
I don't know.
There's the subtle influence of the color of the packaging and what that does to your mood as you're watching this. You're seeing a lot of like soft blues, dark patterns, not necessarily the harsh reds.
It's really, and it leads me to this, because when Chessie doesn't feel well, when she has diarrhea or something like that, or her stomach is upset, we are always told, feed her chicken and rice.
Chicken and rice.
Cook the rice, cook the chicken for the dog. And so if that leads me to conclude that real people food is actually better for dogs than dog food, but I need to know that before I switch. I can afford to switch, but she loves the food. Although maybe she only loves it
because she
says, that's all I get.
At this point, you might run into, this is what she's used to. So maybe and something, because I tried this with the cats, with Butch and Sundance. Because like you, I was like, am I being a bad owner? Maybe I should get this stuff.
Feel.
So I got the stuff that's in the refrigerator at the supermarket. And there's only one pack of cat food. Everything else is this gourmet dog food. Brought it home, said, I'm your greatest owner ever.
And did they like it?
They were like, this is terrible.
Okay.
Wouldn't touch it. So we had to go back to, what we used to use.
So I don't know. I mean, I feel, I'm conflicted and guilted. And I... For all I know, I mean, it's possible. They never tell you how much these things cost. They don't tell you that.
Well, you're not going to get real pricing. You're going to get a trial price.
Yeah, yeah. I get. So the dog eats in the morning and the dog eats in the afternoon.
Oh,
yeah. So that's two. I feed her twice a day. So two of these might cost $10 each.
Now,
I don't know.
Does Chessie have a gluten or a soy allergy that we need to be aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. She's not Eric Rideholm, who, you know, is gluten free all the time. No, I don't know. I mean, if it's a scam to get you to buy more expensive, smaller portions, it's brilliant.
Yeah, on some level,
it's brilliant.
Probably
I admire
is.
It. It's like I said, I admire Subaru. I do. Yeah. I mean, you know, they know what they're doing. They're targeting a very specific feeling, and they know exactly what they're doing. So anyway, if we have vets, maybe somebody could let me know. We'll take a break when we come back. Tim Legler?
That's
Tim
right.
Legler will join us. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Bridget Artman. This is a song called Running. A few years ago, we played a song by her called Never Bored. And she still claims, according to her dad, who wrote us the note, that she got her early musical influences not from the Beatles or Wang Chung, but rather the Tony's mailbag jingle.
With Beatles, Wang Chung, and the mailbag.
Yeah, and the mailbag. Again, Bridget Artman doing Running and playing in Tim Legler. Now, I'm flying blind here with this question for Legler, the open. I could be wrong. I seem to recall, and I hope this is true, but if not, it isn't true. I seem to recall that you have a daughter who was a good basketball player, was a college basketball player. Am I inventing that reality, or is that true?
No, you're not inventing that. I had a son as well. Both of them were Division III players, but they both had very good careers. My daughter was a 1,000-point scorer in college. She broke all their 3-point shooting records, and so they started playing when they were 5 and carried it all the way through college.
Okay, good, because that leads me into everything that I want to ask, because you are someone who has watched women's basketball. You're not someone who's never really seen it or someone who's only watched men's basketball. You probably coached your daughter. You probably know the game. Am I right on that?
100%. I coached, yes, hundreds of games. I coached my daughter and including, at a pretty high level AAU program. So I had players on my team that, you know, pretty much every girl on my team that I coached with my daughter all played college basketball. So, yeah, I've been watching it, coaching it, big fan of it, supporter of it, respect it, the whole bit. You got it.
Okay. So, excuse me, what we're not going to do is try and compare women's basketball to men's basketball. There are obvious physiological differences. Sure. Women don't jump in the way that men jump, but the structure of the game, the passing of the game, the open shots on the game, the boxing out, the defense, that's all pretty similar, which leads me to your thoughts. And I specifically wanted you on this, on Caitlin Clark, who I think is a fabulous pass first guard. And I just wonder what you think when you watch her.
Yeah, Tony, I think a couple things. First, and I said this recently, and people were kind of surprised to hear this because I'm watching the highest level of basketball every night for a living. That's what I do. I'm watching NBA. I'm breaking the game down. I played at that level for 10 years. And Caitlin Clark has become, for me, I think, one of the five most entertaining basketball players I've ever watched. And that's men, women, any level, you name it. Yeah. That's what she is for me. She's must-see TV because of the skill level is off the charts, obviously. And I never thought we'd ever see a women's player shoot the basketball from the distances that she's shooting it from. And actually, you could make an argument that her range relative to, you know, her game, her sport, is better than even Steph Curry's range. And I say that because she pulls shots from 30 feet or more. She does that several times per half as part of a designed, you know, part of her game. Steph Curry, yeah, he can take those deep ones and, you know, he'll every now and then he'll make a half court shot. And then in the course of the game, shot clock's winding down. If he has to pull one from 30 feet, he can do that. But Caitlin Clark is doing this 6 to 8 times a night. And she's shooting a really high percentage on those shots. So I've never thought I'd ever see a female player with this kind of range because of the strength that it's going to take. And, you know, her mechanics are perfect. She obviously has very strong hands, wrists, forearms to be able to get the ball there from that distance. But, you know, that's just one component of her game. You mentioned pass first point guard.
Yeah.
Some of the things she does with her vision and her delivery of the basketball are absolutely incredible. I actually did a breakdown on this on Scott Van Pelt the other night because she made plays at the end of the game in the Big Ten Championship when they're down late and she's making passes that very few people who have ever played would have the nerve to attempt and much less trust your teammates in that situation when you're a player of that caliber and that high profile. Your team's down 5 inside of 2 minutes. You know, you're throwing a 60-foot lead pass to a big girl running the court with defenders back there. Like, very few people, Tony, would ever have the nerve to throw it, much less the skill and precision to deliver it exactly where it needs to be delivered. So the skill level is just incredible. And she's just so fun to watch. She comes through in the clutch. She carries herself with class and dignity. She's a competitor. I'm just obviously a huge fan, and you can sign me up to watch Caitlin Clark any night of the week.
Yeah, she rises to the moment. I mean, she was terrible in the first half against Nebraska.
She was
0 for 9 from 3, and she had 4 points. She came through with 30 in the second half, 30 in the second half in the overtime, and either scored or assisted on every basket in the overtime. So she understands the responsibility of being a star, and that thing that Curry understands, the thing that LeBron understands, the responsibility of being a star in the moments when stardom is called for. My slight disagreement is I've watched her about 6 times this year. I don't think she's a great shooter. You know, I mean, I think she could be a great shooter. I agree with you about the range, but she's clanging them an awful lot of times. And you were a great shooter, and this is what I want to ask, because she's still a kid. She's still in college. How do you get to be – she's a great clutch shooter, and there's a difference between that and a great shooter. But how do you get to be a better shooter? In other words, when you practice, do you need defenders, or is it just a solitary drill of practice?
No, you definitely need to replicate a hand up and shooting over defenders, and there's a lot of different ways and drills that you do that, and shooters are doing that all the time. Yeah, but certainly there's a lot of repetition that goes into it when there is no defender. You're just trying to perfect your mechanics, your the way you shift your weight, your balance. You know, one thing about Caitlin Clark, you know, I believe she does take shots that are incredibly difficult shots.
Yeah, yeah.
That tend to lead to maybe her percentages not being great. But if you look at her overall shooting percentages, relative to the number of shots she has to take, how difficult those shots are, the amount of attention that she is being given by defenses, the way that teams are overloading to her. It's actually pretty incredible that she shoots the percentages that she does. Is she a classically, perfect shooter, the way you would describe some people that have played this game over the years? No, probably not. But it's pretty close. I think the one thing she does that hurts her sometimes, she drifts a lot when she shoots, and she drifts left a lot when she shoots. And some of that is escaping defenders because she's taking these tough shots, and there's usually a defender pretty close to her. So she's kind of drifting left and backwards as she's releasing the ball, which gives her a better chance to get it off without it being tipped or deflected. And as a result, when you're shooting from those distances and you're not on balance going up and down in the same plane, it's difficult to shoot the ball accurately, because when you drift, it's literally like you're shooting at a moving target because your body's moving. The ball is moving as you're releasing it. It's moving right, left. That makes it very difficult to shoot the ball accurately at the rim. And she does that a lot, and I think it does affect some of her percentages. She gets to the WNBA. She's not going to have to take as many of these incredibly difficult deep jump shots a night, because she's going to have a ton of support and help on her team and players, of a similar caliber. So I think you're going to see maybe a little bit of a different game out of Caitlin Clark when she gets to the pros.
Do you think so? I mean, you could tell, for example, that Elena Deladon, when she was going to go to the pros, you could tell she was going to be a great player. You could tell Candace Parker was going to be a great player in the pros because of their physical prominence in college. You just go, they're bigger, they're stronger, they're better, they're faster, and all of that. She's 6 feet tall. I mean, that's nothing in the WNBA. Do you think she's going to be a star in the WNBA?
I do think she's going to be a star. I do think it's going to take a little time. First of all, she's a target. She's a target coming into that league because no women's player has ever gotten this amount of attention prior to arriving in the WNBA.
And
particularly
she's chippy.
When you haven't won a national championship.
She's chippy. She is.
No doubt about it. And she has to be, because she is her name is on giant letters at the top of that whiteboard in the other locker room, and there's some resentment there, and you can even tell by the comments that Cheryl Swoops made. There's a lot of people in the WNBA that feel that way, and it's almost like they're hoping and waiting for her to fail, and they're going to contribute to her failure when she gets there. Like she's a target. But look, here's the thing, Tony. That goes away if you can deliver, because Luka Doncic was a target. His rookie year, all the hype around Luka Doncic, and he's playing, and he's laughing, and he's smirking, and he's acting like, this is so easy for me, look at me. And I said, halfway through his rookie year, I said, man, he's going to get laid out. Now, this was the league's changed, so it's not the 90s anymore like when I played, and a guy would get laid out because you weren't going to get suspended for that. So you can't quite retaliate that way, but I know he was getting under guys' skin. But here's the deal. Guess what? Over a period of a few years, he proved there's nothing you can do about it. I'm too good, so it doesn't matter. And that kind of dies down. Yeah, you want to stop him, but you don't have the same vitriol. I think she's coming into the WNBA, and a lot of people feel that way. So she's going to have to be able to deliver the goods, and it might take her a little time to get comfortable there. But I do think she's going to be a star. Now, she might not put up, she's not going to put up 25, 30 a night in the WNBA.
She doesn't have to. She doesn't have a different game.
100%. She's going to be one of those players. She's on any given night, she can go off for 30. But the thing is, she's got the luxury of having other teammates that are going to command a lot of attention. So she's going to take better looks from the three, but she can be more selective. She's actually going to be, I think, a phenomenal playmaker at the WNBA level because of her vision, handle, and passing. And her teammates right now probably don't know much about her. They probably even resent her. They're going to love her because she's going to reward you. She makes you want to play harder, cut harder, run the floor, because you will get rewarded playing with Caitlin Clark, because she's going to deliver the basketball and be a little bit more selective when she shoots. And I think she is going to be a star, but it's going to be in a different way than now, because we're all tuning in to see, is she going to go off for 40 tonight? And it's so spectacular to watch. It might not be like that, but I do think she's going to be, a perennial all-star in that league eventually, however many years that takes, a year, two, three, whatever it is. She's eventually going to find her footing in that league, and her skill is so high and her competitiveness so high, there's no doubt in my mind she's gonna be a big success at that level.
That's great to know. All of that is great to know. I mean, I when I watch women's basketball on that level, on the LSU, South Carolina, Iowa, USC level, I'm always totally impressed at the percentage of threes that go in. I mean, they really shoot threes very, very well, which
That's
leads
incredible.
Me to this.
And the free throw shooting, Tony, the free throw shooting. Yeah. Like, I run a basketball camp every summer. I have 300 kids come through my camp, and it's co-ed, so it's boys and girls, and they come through, and it's just there's something special about working with them, too. They're so receptive to anything that you can tell them to help them, and they will work diligently when they go home to what you told them that day, and I've seen it. Over the course of a week, even, the improvement that girls can make with their shooting mechanics in particular, because they're so dedicated to listening and taking it in and then trying to go perfect it. So I'm amazed at the big girls in college basketball. They're the centers that go to the line and just swish two free throws when they have to have it. And you're looking at an NBA game, and you don't feel as confident when you've got a center going to the line in an important moment. In the college basketball game or the WNBA, you almost feel like it's automatic. Those girls go to the line, and they've perfected that. And it's really a beautiful thing to watch. The skill component of the game is so high with them.
Plus, they don't even get nervous. They're happy for the moment. Tim, I'm so glad that this turned out to be true, that your daughter was a player. We could talk about Daylen Clark. Because if not, I wouldn't have had anything to say. Thank you, Tim.
You got it.
Tim Legler, boys and girls, we will take a break. We will come back with Booger McFarland. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Say to shut me up, I swear you could just walk on by me, or you could stay.
This is Bridget Artman one more time. This is called Is It Too Much to Ask? It's out on all the streaming platforms. This is from her dad, Bob Artman. Says Bob Artman, Bridget's dad. Isn't that wonderful? Michael, if people like Bridget Hartman want to send in, Artman rather, want to send in their original music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
Lovely. Plays in Booger McFarland. I have an odd question to begin with, but I don't know that it affects everyone who ever played in the league, even for 8-10 years. I don't know this. Were you ever a free agent?
No, I was never a free agent. I was in Tampa for 7 years, and then I got traded on a Tuesday afternoon at like 4:30 to Indy, and next morning I had to go to Indianapolis, and then I played 2 years there, and then I was done.
Well, you've been around free agents. Some people can't wait to be free agents. Others are happy where they are. Do you recall ever having a teammate who couldn't wait to get out? Or a teammate who just wanted to stay and didn't want to be a free agent?
Yeah, I've seen both. I don't know if it's about getting out, Tony. I think we only can determine our true fair market value if we're free. Because otherwise, the job or the team that you're with may or may not take you to that value. So a lot of guys want to get free so they can understand what they're truly worth. And I think that's the reason. Now, you get those instances where guys are from Houston, but they may be playing in Buffalo, and they become a free agent. and Houston needs their position. And so they, you know, all the signs are pointing to that player going to Houston because he's going home. Or like in Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins' wife's family is from the Atlanta area.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
spend a bunch of time in the Atlanta area in the offseason. And so when Atlanta came knocking, Atlanta blew everyone out of the water with the money, 4 years, $180 million, 100 guaranteed. But something tells me if they would have just gotten close, that Kirk would have wanted to go, because guess what? The wife can go home. It gets a little chilly in Minnesota, Tony. Like, who wants to be up there where there's 4 foot of snow on the ground when you can be in hot Atlanta? You can be an hour from Augusta. You can go watch the Braves play. You can play inside. And so all the signs would probably point to him wanting to, quote unquote, go home where his wife is from.
I understand that. But, and I thought about this last night in preparation for asking this question. It would seem to me that in most cases, if you were on a good team, if you were there for 4 or 5 years, if you liked the structure, the coach, your teammates, that you might want to become a free agent to see how much you could get, but that you would not necessarily want to leave. And I'm wondering if that's your sense of most of the people you've played with.
Yeah, like nobody really wants to leave. The overwhelming majority of people want to stay because, like, you've built your life there. You're probably established, whether you have a family, your kids are in school, the wife knows where she's going to get her hair done, you know what the grocery store, like, you know all the little things that make life really, really enjoyable. And, you know, when you pick up and move, as somebody who had to go to Indianapolis, like, you get there and you don't know anything. Like, I was living out of a hotel for the first, 2 to 3 weeks. I didn't know where to go eat. Everything that I did, I had to put in the GPS. So there's a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, when you're in a new spot, you're trying to find things that are certain as soon as you can, and there's just nothing there when you go to a new city.
See, I understand, you know, maybe trying to improve yourself, maybe get to a better team or something like that. The one
right.
free agent signing to me that has to simply be about money, it can't, there's nothing else it can be about, is Tony Pollard leaving Dallas for Tennessee. Like, I go, why? What is the attraction to leave a team, a playoff team that may or may not be a Super Bowl team, to a team that's going the other way, that just got rid of a coach, that doesn't really seem to have particular stability at the moment, unless he's born and raised in Tennessee? I didn't get it. How about you?
I think Tony played at the University of Memphis, so, you know, that's a little closer to Nashville than Dallas is. That's number one. Number two, I don't think the Cowboys really were going to be able to match the money. If you go back a couple years ago, it was Tony and Zeke, and, you know, Tony was kind of the new kid on the block and the backup quarterback, and everybody loves him. And, man, Tony should be the feature back. Well, guess what? They made Tony the feature back last year, and they really didn't like Tony that whole lot, or he didn't perform to that level. So I think when you add those two things together, plus, quote-unquote, homecoming the call, because he played at the University of Memphis, and they got the money right, and Tennessee's trying to change the culture, I think you can look and deduce that that's why he went to Nashville.
Okay, I will live with that. That makes sense to me. The other thing that stuns me, because you look at a contract like Chris Jones, is that his name, Chris Jones, staying at Kansas City, you look at that contract for a pass rusher, you look at the contracts for quarterbacks, running backs get nothing in comparison, Booger. Nothing. Like, you know, they're signing for $9 million for 2 years, and you say, what happened here?
Well, the running back market, especially the middle to low-end running back, that market hasn't been as high. Now, you look at somebody like Saquon, he obviously got $37, $38 million, like those guys that are the high-end talent. But, Tony, there's so many running backs. And that position is a position where the moment you touch the ball, think about this, the moment you touch the ball, there's 11 sets of eyes, 22 eyes looking at you, trying to hit you and knock your block off.
Right.
And so
right.
the risk of injury and the percentage that you're going to get injured is really higher than any other position. And, you know, if you look at all the running backs that were on the market this year, the market was oversaturated. And so when there's a ton of supply, the demand is not going to be that high, so the price is not going to be as high as you would want.
That makes sense. It does make sense to me. But, I mean, I look at And I guess it's because he's 30 years old. I look at Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's getting $11 million. And I'm not
you
laughing
think
at 11
Henry's
million.
The first ballot Hall of Famer, Tony?
Derrick Henry, is he not in your mind? I would have thought. No?
I think he's borderline at best. I don't think he's a first ballot guy, do you?
Wow. Okay. I mean, again, your set of eyes knows a lot more than my set of eyes does. I thought the numbers he piled up over a period of time, the carries that he made, the value to a team, maybe not. Can you tell me why Austin Eckler would go to Washington? Can you tell me why anybody would go to Washington? It's got to be money, right?
Well, there's no doubt it's money. Someone's trash may be another team's treasure, Tony. Like, Austin had kind of battled for money with Los Angeles for a couple of years. Remember, he held out. They didn't want to pay him any money. And so rather than continue to battle and go back and forth, let me leave because you clearly don't want me in L.A., and I'm going to go where somebody wants me. It's as simple as that. And the money may have been very similar, but I got more love in Washington than I did in L.A.
Okay. It's a very individual choice for all of these people. They get free agency. They can do what they want. I think the Derrick Henry thing is big going to Baltimore. I think the Kirk Cousins thing is the biggest one because that's a division that's very winnable. And Kirk Cousins is still like right around 10th best, 8 to 12, somewhere in there, right? He's quality quarterback. Do you like that move?
I love the Kirk Cousins move because if you look at what Atlanta has done, like the last couple, 3 years, like they've spent a bunch of first round picks on offensive talent. Bijan Robinson, Drake London out of USC, Kyle Pitts out of Florida. First rounder. The offensive line is pretty good. And then they had Desmond Ridder trying to throw him the football.
And he came to work
like, are you kidding me? Like, I can go work all offseason and I got to deal with Desmond Ridder. And so I think everybody in Atlanta now realizes that you have the ultimate point guard in Kirk Cousins that can get you the football.
Right.
He can put everybody in their position. And now if you're Drake London, you're Kyle Pitts, you're Bijan Robinson, if you get open – and you are able to receive the ball, he can get you the football. So I think that's why I like that, because it seems to be a perfect fit.
I agree with that. I think that that's a team that actually could contend for a Super Bowl if he has a good year. It leads me to this. The quarterback market is narrowing. I can't even say that word. Getting smaller is a better way to say that. What do the tea leaves tell you about Justin Fields?
I think the tea leaves and the NFL are saying the same thing, that the value that the outside has in Justin Fields isn't the value that's inside the league. I think, Justin Fields is a wow player when it comes to running the football. I think he was like fifth or sixth in the league in rushing that year. And, he makes all those sports center plays. But let's be honest, Tony, like, he's not a really good quarterback. And for as much as we look at the upside, at some point, upside has to come to fruition. Otherwise, it's just potential, and potential will get you fired. And I think that's the reason why a lot of these coaches and organizations aren't willing to go down that road. Like, it's 3 years of Justin Fields, and we still have questions whether he can consistently deliver the football down the field. And I think after 3 years, if you still have those questions, what gives an organization the confidence that they can go spend a second, third, whatever the number is, pick on him, and that he's going to deliver for them? And I think that's why he's still in Chicago right now. And to be honest, I don't think anybody's going to trade anything of significance for him.
Well, I mean, this was pointed out to me yesterday. He was picked about 10 players ahead of Mac Jones. Mac Jones had a good rookie year and nothing after that. Mac Jones just got a sixth-round pick. And Justin Fields, my life is distorted by being with Wilbon. It's just distorted because he thinks Justin Fields is Lamar Jackson. And I go, well, what makes you think that exactly? I mean, what has he really done? And he's convinced that, he would take Justin Fields over the number one pick. My sense, if you have the number one overall pick 2 years in a row and you punt on it 2 years in a row, like if you somehow keep Justin Fields and trade the number one pick again, then you should never be allowed to have a number one pick, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty good deduction there. The reason the Bears have to take Caleb Williams is this, is that they are unsure about Justin Fields. If they were 99% sure about Justin Fields, you trade the pick, you get a bunch of picks, and you build around him and you move forward. But if you have any doubt, Tony, any doubt whatsoever, and clearly they do, then you got to take another quarterback, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, whoever you want to take, because you don't plan on being at that position picking number one again. And so you got to get a quarterback for the future. Much like Atlanta. Like, Atlanta has all those first-round picks, as we just talked about, but Atlanta was terrible because they didn't have a quarterback. If you're Chicago, what good does it do to amass all this talent and you don't have a quarterback? So they got to get a quarterback, which is why I think they're going to take Caleb Williams. Although Jaden Daniels is closer to Caleb Williams than you think, Tony.
Well, I appreciate this. I'm going to say this to Wilbon. Say, shut up. Booger said it. Just stop. You just stop. Booger, as always,
thank
you. You
don't have to throw me in there like that, you know.
I want to. It gives me credibility. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Later.
Booger McFarland, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We'll come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
That's James Bug, who writes, I've been wanting to write an instrumental jingle for the mailbag for some time. Love you guys. So hope to hear my jingle soon. I listen daily, and I'm a huge PTI fan. That's lovely.
It is lovely.
I'm sure he plays all the instruments on that.
I'm guessing he does. That was very well done, James. Nice. Thank you.
Yeah. Do you want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com, forward a location in the D.C. area nearest you, then pop one in, my friend, and you will be thrilled.
That's it for us today. Before you get to the mailbag, let me just say, and this will recall what happened on the open of the show. Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl. Nighttime would find me in Rosie's Cantina. Music would play and Felina would whirl. It's Marty Robbins, El Paso.
It's got to be from, what, like 56, something like that?
It's from a long time ago. Thanks to our guests today, Booger McFarland and Tim Legler. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple, please leave us a review. Right, let's look. I'm going totally cold.
Flying blind
on this today. This is from Dennis Murphy. I was listening to your podcast where you discussed and railed against the country switching over to daylight savings time last weekend. You mentioned that Arizona does not observe daylight savings time. I was living in Phoenix in 1966 when the decision was made that the country would advance the clocks 1 hour in the spring. Arizona complied that year. When late June came around, it became immediately obvious that having it be 105 degrees at 10 p.m. instead of 9 p.m. was not a good idea. And Arizona has never since observed daylight savings time. And that's from Murphy now in San Francisco. That's good to know. From Alan Walls in Zaragoza in El Salvador.
Okay.
Which in English is the Salvador.
The Salvador, yes.
Full list of states and territories that don't do daylight savings time. According to the Department of Transportation, which oversees the nation's time zones, there are two states and five territories that do not observe it. Arizona, with the exception of the Navajo Nation, Hawaii, American Samoa, Guam, the Northern Mariana Islands, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. From Joe Pearson in Indianapolis, frequent emailer, yes, Indiana has a unique history with time zones and daylight savings time. And the issues remain controversial to this day, but let me give you a rundown on the current status since you seem to need a little help. Most of Indiana is in the Eastern time zone. A few counties in the Northwest near Chicago and Southwest are in the Central time zone. When I was growing up, Indiana was one of three states that did not observe daylight savings time, along with Arizona and Hawaii. So we were on New York time in the winter, Chicago time in the summer, which was kind of cool for a kid because it meant TV shows were on an hour earlier in the summer. But I digress. By 2005, the legislature moved to adopt daylight savings time beginning in 2006, and it has been that way ever since. And Joe Pearson says, and I hate it. P.S. For Mark in Boyd's, Maryland, a euphonium looks an awful lot like a tuba, so Tony does have a point. We found out that Boyd's, Maryland is not far from D.C.
No, it's
right
just
up 270?
Yeah, up 270, just north of Germantown. Yeah.
From Jason Blazer in Lake Orion, I keep forgetting. Well, dearest Dr. Hofwoff, I'm afraid you've done it. You not only opened up the Pandora's box that is daylight saving, but you also left an open-ended question about how it works. I'm positive your inbox has now been inevitably flooded by experts and Google experts telling you exactly what it entails, when it started, who started it, where they started it, why it's in effect, and how it all got done. So instead of adding to that pile, I drew you a picture of a duck. And he draws a picture of a duck, which is really nice.
Blue duck?
From, yeah, the Blue Duck Tavern.
Oh,
from
the Blue Duck. The whole duck.
Time is on my side, keeps on slipping, heals wounds and befuddles Tony. Spring forward, fall back. Here's another idea. Leave the clocks alone.
Yes, please.
From Todd McElway in Hagerstown, Maryland. Tony, waking up in the dark at 6:45 a.m., my thoughts immediately turned to you. The old man's got it right, I whispered. I couldn't have been the only one. P.S., my kids asked why I was getting them up for school in the dark. They'll call you later and explain. Yes, it's a week and a half. That's all it is, but it's craziness.
Yeah.
From Joseph Moulton, who signs this, sincerely yours, Arizona. We're back on Pacific time, baby. Please tell New Mexico, Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho to eat it. Shane Lutke, or Lutke. The Midwest, as defined by the federal government, comprises the states of Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. That's the list. That's the list.
That feels more accurate.
From Tim Cree, our friend in Fort Collins, Colorado. On Monday, we heard the states that are allegedly in the Midwest. I'm just wondering, how far does the west of the United States extend? I can accept every state that touches the Pacific Ocean and every state that touches those states is in the west. But Wichita, Kansas is the same distance from New York City as it is from Los Angeles. If Kansas is in Midwest or Mideast, it's sure as heck fire is mid-something. Don't worry, I'll just go to the bathroom and wait for you to answer my email. These mice aren't going to flush themselves. I think we've come up with a phrase. I don't exactly know how to use it. From Larry Shoemaker in Kansas City. I stopped in my tracks when you read the email about the woman who refers to cows as moo cows and people thinking that was strange. And then you backed her up by saying, moo cow, I've heard that. As an English major, of course you did. It's the first sentence of A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man by James Joyce.
Oh, there you
yes,
go.
Yes, that James Joyce, not the baseball umpire who flushed the mouse on Armando Galarraga's perfect game. Here's the opening from that classic book. Once upon a time, in a very good time it was, there was a moo cow coming down the road. It may not be a David Aldridge moment, but thank you for triggering that 50-year-old memory. James Joyce.
Jimmy Joyce. I'm not sure if anyone actually called him Jimmy.
Boy, oh boy. Can he write? Could he write?
Yes,
wow.
Yes.
Josh Cromwell. I read everything he ever wrote, and I tried so hard on the last one. I just couldn't get through it. It was...
Was it Ulysses?
No, Ulysses is the greatest book ever written.
It's brilliant, yeah.
No. This was... what's
Finnegan's Wake.
Finnegan's Wake is impossible. No, it's not even Finnegan's Wake. There's another one after that. Or maybe it is Finnegan's Wake, but I think it's not Finnegan's Wake.
Back for more whiskey?
No, Here Comes Everything or something. I don't know what it is. From Josh Cromwell in Moselle, Mississippi. Look him up. I realized that my hearing may not be what it once was because I did a double take during Monday's mailbag when I thought I heard Michael say bleep goats. At first, I thought that perhaps Nigel. Nigel say bleep goats. At first, I thought that perhaps Nigel had been headbutted by a goat at some point, or maybe a goat had kept him out of its limo, like a certain Olympic athlete. But then I listened back and realized he actually said bleat goats. I'm deeply relieved that the mailbag won't be inundated with emails from goat farmers saying, Fonz you too, to Nigel, crisis averted. P.S. In my younger days, my grandparents raised goats, and I got pretty good at a spot-on impersonation of a goat's bleat. I defy the Littles to produce a lamer party trick than that. From Jonathan Scriven, formerly of Nice in France and now back in the DMV. I feel the need to extend our collective reprimand of your Gretzky stats hot take with one last example of how wrong you were. Hank Aaron had 6,856 total bases in his career. Albert Pujols is next with 6,211. That's a difference of 645 bases. There are 90 feet between bases, making the difference 58,050 feet. That means to catch Aaron, Pujols would have to run around the base path for 11 miles. The fastest a human has ever run 10 miles is 44.04, a feat accomplished by Kenyan runner Bernard Kibet in 1999. In other words, the fastest 10-miler in history would need more than 3/4 of an hour of running in a straight line to cover the gap between Aaron and the guys in second place. On behalf of the Littles, I hope we have made our point. Yes, from Nathan in Gilbert, Arizona. My company announced this week we were switching health insurance providers from Cigna to Aetna. My second thought was, this is going to be so much better for me and my family. My first thought was, I have to tell Tony. Obviously, have my priorities in order. Yes, I'd like to submit my application to be the official franchise business consultant of the Tony Kornheiser Show. Basically, I go around, tell people what they should be doing. Technically, they don't have to listen to me, but they would be better off if they did. I also spend a lot of time complaining about things. I guess that's not much different than what you do. And please tell Justin in Harrisburg, North Carolina, to eat it. And Steve the sycophant. When channel surfing on Saturday, I hit Ben-Hur on Turner Classic Movies. Believe it or not, this was the one-sentence synopsis. Quote, an enslaved prince, Charlton Heston, meets a Roman, Stephen Boyd, in a chariot race. Unquote. I really, really think the synopsis, folks, should have used at least two sentences. All right. Now, do you have an answer for me? What was the book?
So these are the
go ahead.
All right, Dubliners.
Dubliners the first one.
A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, Ulysses, Finnegan's Wake, and then some fiction, Stephen Eero, The Cat and the Devil, The Cats of Copenhagen.
Okay, so it must be Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah.
It must be Finnegan's Wake that I just cut. I could not understand.
Yeah.
I tried my best. I love James Joyce. I couldn't get through it. But Ulysses is the greatest book ever written.
Yeah, it's
pretty. You're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always. Do wear white.
Who is Tony?
Tony Kornheiser.
Who is that?
It's a PTI guy on ESPN.
Okay.
I've been waiting for the bomb to drop. What are you gonna say to shut me up? I swear you could just walk on by me, or you could stand behind me. It's fine if you think I'm ugly, just as long as you still love me. I know you don't want to. to the car seat trying to catch my breath. Everything inside my heart is telling me I'm next, but I keep running, running away from the truth. I keep running, running away from crying into the car seat trying to catch my breath. Everything inside my heart is telling me I'm next, but I keep running.